Hi, everybody. Welcome to this Ocean Life podcast. I'm your host, Josh Peterson. Today's episode is brought to us by Burnout Sunscreen, a family-owned, environmentally friendly company making great skincare products. Check them out on the web at burnoutsunscreen.com. Now, in episode number 9 here, we speak with Lincoln Dews, who is a professional stand-up paddleboard athlete, currently, at the time of this recording, one of the top guys in the world. We have a lot of great stories with Lincoln about his growing up on the Gold Coast of Australia, competing at a very high level from an early age. He did Molokai Channel, Molokai to Oahu, when he was 15 on a prone board, and he surfs, and he foils, and he sails. He's just a man of the water. Anyway, really stoked to have him. A lot of great stuff here, and thanks for being here once again. Appreciate you guys downloading, listening, and let's get into the ocean life of Lincoln Dews. All right, Lincoln, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, pleasure, mate. Thanks for having me, Josh.
Yeah, no, you're a super busy guy and a lot of fun stuff to talk about. I'm really looking forward to it. So Lincoln, you know, looking at your website and looking at your bio that describes sort of your background and all the cool things you're doing, you mentioned that you come from a family of like four generations of watermen. And, you know, that's really interesting, you know, sort of how you grew up in a family that was so focused on the ocean. So, you know, talk about your life growing up in Australia, what your parents were up to and how your family influenced, you know, what you're doing today.
Yeah, I think like growing up, it was always, I think whether you knew it or not, it was, everything was essentially to do with the water. My dad works as a climate change consultant. And so everything he's done through work and like pleasure has always been through the water. So we grew up surfing and sailing and paddling, surf life saving, you name it, everything to do with the water. We were doing it. And like, I think my uncles were both commercial fishermen and my grandparents were fishermen. And I think it's just something I guess I grew into.
Yeah.
Everything seemed to be, it was just normal.
Right.
It was like, you woke up, you went to the beach, went for a surf, went for a paddle. And I think that was just instilled that was normal growing up.
Yeah. And then where was that at? Like, describe the town, you know, the environment, the ocean, the conditions that you grew up, you know, in.
So I grew up on the Sunshine Coast, like Maroochydore area. It's just it's a relatively small kind of area. Semi tourist area just north of like Brisbane in Queensland. So warm water, nice little waves, a very active beach kind of lifestyle. And on top of that too, my parents spent a lot of time when we were growing up down the northern New South Wales coast. So probably between Brisbane and Sydney.
Uh-huh.
And that area is a lot more remote, a lot more kind of raw, big national parks, long beaches, a lot of good fishing down there. So we're kind of jumping between the two. We got a nice mix of like, it was always on the beach, but nice mix of like, I guess a tourism kind of area and then being a bit more remote. So it was, very lucky to kind of grow up in some nice areas.
Oh yeah. It sounds like it. And so you grew up kind of doing it all, surfing and then the life saving as a kid, surf life saving, which, you know, here in California where I am, it's, you know, it's called junior lifeguards. Maybe it's the same out there. And then sailing in so many disciplines. And so as you grew older, were there certain sports or activities that you really gravitated towards, or were you just doing it all and loved doing it all?
I've always had a thing about I think I really struggle to just focus on one aspect. I think, and that's the beauty about like being able to be in the ocean, and that is every day there's always something different you can do, and there's always the conditions are always a little bit different. And I think that like growing up was a challenge for me. I was always a kid that wanted to do it all.
Yeah.
On top of that, definitely I think I found a love for endurance sports.
Mm-hmm.
I really, for some reason, like felt like really started to enjoy like the surf life saving, the junior lifeguard racing, and that kind of competitive endurance sport, competitive edge. And that kind of, I guess, merged when I kind of found stand-up paddling and then some of the long distance prone paddling races. That was kind of a perfect fit for me because it mixed that that endurance kind of sporting side with the skills and knowledge of just being in the ocean and trying to ride swells and having that kind of general ocean intuition.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, growing up, seeing it for, you know, every day almost, it's one of those sort of natural skills you get of reading the water, you know, and just whether it's surfing or paddling or sailing and being able to apply that, you know, in these endurance, you know, races and stuff. And then and to touch on that, you know, you also mentioned and you won a national Ironman title when you were like 14 years old or a teenager?
No, never won a national title. Won a state title when I was 14. Never could win a national title. Came close a couple of years, but never managed to get one.
Yeah. Wow. That's still good in the state. So is that like a full on Ironman, like the full distances?
So that's like I think when I won my first state titles, it was like a NIPA, so a junior lifeguard state title. So yep. It was just the board and the swim with no ski paddle.
Yeah.
Similar distances. The NIPAs generally race similar distances, but it's, we're just without the ski leg, and that kind of comes later.
Yeah. Right. And so when did you, I mean, are you still active in the surf life saving activities when you're back home, or is that something you had to, because you can't do it all the time, right? Is that something that you still participate in, or have you had to kind of put that in the back burner a little bit?
It's, you know what, in the last couple of years it's definitely been in the back burner. Like growing up, all I wanted to be was a Nichiren Ironman. That's all I wanted to be and all I kind of ever dreamed about being. But at the last couple of years, finding like the endurance side of like ocean sports, I've kind of put the life saving on the back burner. But at home, like I still work as a lifeguard. Still patrolling, like a voluntary member of the surf club, and still go and train with all the guys there and do a bit of racing at home. Like I think it's something that it's a very hard lifestyle to leave.
Yeah,
when you can't just walk out of surf life saving.
No, yeah, but
such
nobody
a family culture.
Yeah, no, for sure, and that's so neat to see that. You know, it's such a it's a multi generational activity. You know, where there's the young kids, and then the parents are still involved and everything. And then, so how did you first get hooked into SUP? You know, where did that, who gave you your first pat, put a paddle in your hand and showed you a board and you went for it? How did that happen?
That was a funny one. I was actually, I was actually doing like a voluntary patrol for the surf club back at home at Noosa Beach one day. And they have a big like surfing festival at Noosa, like on the Puensa, Noosa Festival of Surfing. It's a big longboard. It's a big like week long longboarding, festival that incorporates a lot of different kind of surf craft. And I remember rocking up on the patrol that one day, and they had this stand-up paddleboard race like at Noosa Point. I've never before that never seen anyone stand up
on
a paddleboard. And yeah. It was like the most craziest out there thing I've ever seen. And it was like, went down to check it out, and was lucky enough to get offered a board by just chatting to guys, got offered a board by one of the blokes racing, and had a crack, and it kind of went from there. I was lucky enough; I got my ass absolutely handed to me, but it was I was lucky enough to kind of from there, kind of meet a few people, and then get a few connections, and kind of just run from there.
Yeah, yeah. So you're growing up, you know, racing paddle boards and surf and just paddling prone. And then you step on an SUP. And so what was the attraction? Was it just, a brand new thing to feel? It's a different sensation.
I think it was just a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, I think it was just a challenge. Like, I think like it wasn't something I could jump on and do instantly. And it was like, hang on a second. Like,
yeah,
no, I've got to get good at this.
Right.
And then from there, it was kind of like it was a fun thing to do in the winter when there was no surf life saving, like when the waves were small, and it was just a challenge to try and just not more of the novelty of it, I guess.
Yeah.
And then watching guys like Jamie Mitchell and that start to transition from like guys I idolize in the prone world start to transition into stand up racing, it was just, there was something about it, just the attraction of just, I guess, the challenge of racing long distances on a paddleboard really kind of attracted me towards it.
Yeah. And then you've done so well with it. And I'd like to get into that in a minute. But one thing too that I noticed was, you kind of back to your family a second here, is your dad, your father was racing in Molokai to Oahu, which, you know, everybody pretty much says hands down is the, you know, the heaviest race in the world. And it's, and so how, talk about that. I think you had a cousin as well, also competing in M2O. So you were growing up doing all these things in the water in many different disciplines, being successful yourself as a young guy, and then seeing, you know, your mentors, your father and your cousins competing in, you know, the race, you know, at Molokai to Oahu. And then at some point you went and did a relay with your dad. So talk about that. How cool was that for you to go do that, and how, you know, describe that?
Yeah. So one of my earliest memories growing up is we used to have a poster. I think it might've been from the 1990s. Maybe the 2000 Molokai to Oahu paddle race.
Mm-hmm.
Back when it was sponsored by it was a Quicksilver Edition Molokai to Oahu paddle race.
Yeah.
And Dad competed in it that year. It might have been the second or maybe the third year.
Wow.
So Dad competed. I remember so clearly this big poster on the wall, and it was something that he talked about with one of the best memories of his paddling career. And then I would have been maybe 4 or 5 when he did his second Molokai crossing. And I went over and I remember, like, well, there's photos of me over there. I remember going over and watching it. So it was like, I guess it was something I grew up with. And then one of my cousins, Brendan's a pretty accomplished outrigger paddler. And I think he'd done maybe 20 crossings, 10, 20 crossings on the outrigger. So it was something, I guess, in our family that I was always in my head going to do. I was always going to try and imagine myself doing it.
Right.
And then I would have been 14, I think. Yeah, I was 14 after I just won the state Ironman title. And Dad said to me, hey, maybe this is a year. Do you want to come and do?
Yeah.
Let's go do the relay. And I honestly, like, I've heard stories about the race, but growing up just around it, it was so natural that I never really put the just how big of a challenge it actually was.
Yeah.
I never even doing that relay race, I remember not standing on the start line and not really kind of being able to take it all in, and how big of a challenge and big a feat it was just across the channel. And
no kidding.
it's one of those things that the more I do it, like the more races I do, the more I realize that, oh my God, like,
yeah,
what was I was crazy back then. Like,
yeah, you didn't know, you know, you didn't know what you didn't know. Especially as you were what, 14, 13, 14?
I was 14, just turned 14. Yeah. And Dad would.
Yeah. So I mean, I should have looked. That's an interesting question to see how many other kids that age have done that event. I know there's a couple, maybe 15, 16s that I know, but you might've been one of the earliest ones. But I can imagine you as a Grom, just so excited. You're with your dad, you're on, you know, Kualakoi Beach, you're sitting there and looking across like, this is just, this is going to be a fun paddle with my dad. You know, it's going to be gnarly. But then once you're out there as a kid, what was it like when you kind of hit that realization, like, whoa, this is like nothing else I've ever done? What was that like?
Yeah, that didn't really sit in, funnily enough, until a couple of years later. I think when the year after, I actually came back and did my first solo crossing.
Wow.
And I think that was the point that it hit, that it was like, wow, like, doing this race as a real, no matter how you get across this channel, it's a big feat.
Yeah.
That first year, I guess I was just eyes wide open, just paddling away, just trying to take it all in. And then that year after, it kind of, I was 15, yeah, 15. And I did my first solo on the prone board. And that was, that was the moment. It was like, wow, this is the real deal. This is serious out here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's amazing, man. Congrats for doing it as a 15-year-old. I mean, it almost killed me, and I think I was 35 when I first did it. So it's good for you. Now, so you started the first couple of years doing it prone, and then at some point you switched to SUP. So talk about that. I mean, the difference in the perspective you have of that race and the channel from prone paddling to SUP paddling. How do you compare the two?
It's tricky. Like, they're both chalk and cheese. They're so different. Yeah. They're so different, but they're so similar. I think, like, I've always had the mentality that paddling is paddling no matter what. No matter what you're riding, paddling's paddling. And I think taking that mentality into it was a big help. I've still got a lot to learn on this, on the SUP in that channel. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's interesting. Like, it's kind of cool to have those two different perspectives. I think, like, I did it a couple of years on the first, did one solo on the prone, and then I was racing the stand-up paddleboard a lot throughout the rest of the year. So it was, guess it was only natural that I try and do that race and the stand-up as well. So it was definitely, like, it's definitely a learning curve, but I think, like, in the end of the day, paddling is paddling, and no matter what you're paddling across that channel, it's, it throws up its own challenges and its own own tricks. So
yeah, that's a neat perspective. You know, paddling is paddling. It really is, you know, and I admire you for being strong in both. Like, you could probably decide the day of the race if you wanted, if you had two boards in front of you, one's a prone board, one's an SUP, you know, you could probably equally, you know, be as strong on either. And that's, not many people can say that, you know. One person we just interviewed, actually, Morgan Hostry, is like that, you know, a female who's just strong in both. And so, you know, I admire that you're able to do both. And so this year, talk about the race. I've talked to a few folks who've been there, and I was reading your blog about, you know, some of the challenges you had out there. I mean, it sounded like from the start, in terms of, you know, the logistics part is always so challenging, all the way through into the middle of the channel. It sounds like it was a tough one for you. So take us through this year, if you would.
Yeah, well, this year was this is probably one of my toughest, races. And I think it was definitely the toughest Molokai race I've ever done. Right from the start, Molokai's always a race that logistics plays a massive role in getting your preparation right. And no matter how good your training is leading into the event.
Yeah.
If every little aspect of your preparation isn't right, you could almost throw the race away before it even begins. And that's, like, that's something it's really taken me a lot of time to learn, to try and go, all right, my equipment needs to be right, my logistics needs to be right, my training needs to be right. And it's like, I guess it's such, and that's why it's such an addictive race. It's when you get that one crossing that everything comes together, it's a special day.
Yeah.
So I'm yet to have that feeling, but when I get it, I think it'll be worth it. But this year was a challenging crossing. I actually had a little bit of an issue in my rotator cuff about an hour in. I'm not 100% sure how he did it, but I kind of tweaked, fell a little bit awkwardly down a swell and tweaked it a little bit. And I tried to paddle through it, and it just kind of got consistently worse until I was getting nerve pains running my whole left arm. And the pain was all right. The pain was manageable. It was more so the motor control of my hand. So it was really limiting me. I could paddle on one side effectively, and the other side was pretty average. So about the halfway mark, about 25 km, we pulled the pin just to try and save the rest of the season.
Yeah.
It's been a pretty big season so far. So it was that's one of the hardest decisions I've had to make, is pulling out of that race.
I bet. I can only imagine. I mean, like you said, just getting there, and that's one of the things about that race that there's that physical piece of getting yourself across the channel. And then there's that mental piece of doing the same, but also the mental piece of, is my board going to be there? Is my board showing up on Molokai with a ding on it? Is my tiller messed up? You know, all those little pieces that just kind of eat away at your focus. And then once you're out there, you're running, and then to have, you know, like a physical challenge, you're just like, and then you're like, I've gone so far, but I got to stop. You know, that must have been a tough decision, man. But probably the right one to do, you know?
Yeah, it was definitely like, I'm lucky I've got a really good support team around me, and some guys on the boat were really good, like really, really good to try and assess what was happening and get me out at the right time.
Yeah.
And that's the big challenge of that race is like, it's not just the padlet. Like a lot of these races, you can get away with having a very small support team,
mm-hmm.
but a race like Molokai, so much goes into it from so many different people. And it's always hard to feel it. If you don't perform your best on the day, you're letting a lot of people down, but it's one of those challenges, I guess, that takes a lot of effort from a lot of people to have a good race there.
Yeah, no, it's true. And you're fortunate to have that community around you. You know, that's why that race is so special. The folks who are in your crew and then the folks around you who you see maybe just once a year when you go do that race. So how about then, sort of day to day, one thing I'm always curious is, you know, you do all these different things. You're surfing, you're SUP, you sail, you're foiling and everything. So do you choose your craft based on where you're at, who you're with, and what the conditions are doing? Or, you know, sometimes I do a lot of that too. And sometimes when you have choices of, well, I could surf, I could foil, I could paddle, sometimes you kind of sit there and you're not sure what to do and you kind of just you flip a coin or something. So how do you decide, you know, what activity you jump into day to day?
Mate, that's the hardest question there is. Jesus. Like, what do you ride? Oh, that's like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard for me. Like it's really, I think trying to race and do the endurance, like the ocean endurance sports too, takes a lot of discipline.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of like from what I ride and what I train on depends a lot on like where I am in the season, et cetera. So
yeah,
like when I'm in the paddling season, like paddling, unfortunately, when the waves are good still, paddling takes priority.
Yeah.
And training takes priority. But and like this, I think there's still a good balance. It's still a very, like, I'm very fortunate to be able to choose what I do and where I paddle around the conditions, which is incredibly lucky actually.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like when I said, like if I'm in a training for a prone race, the stand up paddling and stuff like that'll probably take a little bit of a backseat. But yeah, with the foiling and that, like I'm sure there's a lot of people who have that problem, and I'm very lucky to be able to have that problem, wake up and go, oh, what will I ride?
yeah, it's a good problem to have. I know what you're saying. So talk about that, like your transition to foiling. You know, one thing I've noticed here, you know, where I'm in Santa Cruz in California, you know, there's a surfing everywhere, and I'll hang out with guys who've been at it for forever and ever. And it's interesting that, you know, we all surf and you see foiling and you're like, ah, that looks cool, whatever, you know, but I surf. And then suddenly you try it and you fall and then you get a couple and then you get that hook. And almost like when you said you stepped on SUP for the first time, you're like, whoa, what is this? I got to get good at it. It's that challenge of mastering some new activity in the water. So how was your sort of transition and adoption of foiling? You know, was it something similar? Like you saw it, got on it, and you just like, oh man, here's my next new challenge, and got excited about it?
It was similar. It was very similar, probably at a more fast pace and a more dangerous transition. But
yeah,
I remember
indeed.
Seeing I've always had a few mates that were into the early days of like the kite foiling and the windsurf foiling, and we used to watch them and go, that's cool. And then would have been like maybe 3 years ago now, but Kyle Lenny came out with that video, that crazy video of downwind foiling on the SUP, and
right.
That I think that blew a lot of people's minds. And
yeah.
I remember that it would have been a couple of days after that we were chatting. I'm sure we can do that on the kite foil. I'm sure we can do that. And we've pulled out the old original aluminium kite foils. It looked like two knives, like sticky tape together. And like we went out behind the jet ski one day, and I don't think I've ever being that so certain I was going to die within an hour. Like it was the scariest, most intimidating thing I think I've ever done. And then from there, I didn't touch it for a little while until a few more people started riding them. And yeah, it was one of those things that like you ride it. Like I think everybody who tries to ride the foil goes through that same kind of learning path, that it's like, it's scary and it's scary but addictive at the same time.
Yeah,
I think that was the attraction traction early on is like you're paddling in a 1 foot wave and it feels like it's a 6 foot wave. You're like, I don't want to kirk this. I don't want to kirk this. And just that pressure of paddling in a 1 foot wave is so addictive.
Yeah, it is.
You get that little bit of a ride. It's like, it's so worth it.
Yeah, it's crazy how you see. One thing I noticed was you see waves so different. Like you said, like when you're surfing a 1 foot wave, like you just like, you don't really even notice it, so to speak. But with a foil board, you notice it, you know, and it's just, this adds this new dimension to surfing in general and looking at waves and you're like, oh, that crumbly little crappy 1 footer, that looks great. Let's go get that. Versus when you're surfing, you don't even like notice that thing, you know?
Seriously. Yeah. Like this is only the beginning of the foil. I think the foil revolution at the moment. Just talking to a lot of guys, and I think we're really going to start to see over the next 5 years is some real development in downwind racing and downwind, and really opening the possibilities of what is rideable.
Right, I think you're right, and you know the technology is just starting, and it's already changing and evolving so much. So day to day with your foiling, are you doing more like downwind foiling, or you surf foiling, or a little bit of both?
I've actually just started to try and downwind foil. I've been trying to keep off it because of the paddle boards, because I know if I get a good downwind run on the foil, I won't want to go back on the paddle board. But
smart.
I've had it here in Hood River, and I think it's like one of the Columbia Gorge is like one of the best downwind runs I think you'll ever do. So I've had a couple of runs on the foil. It was a humbling experience. It's another challenge, I think.
Yeah.
I've done a little bit of surf foiling, and that's great. But I think the downwind foiling's where I see it going, where I want to take it.
Yep. So now let's say you play it forward a year or something, or probably even less for you. You get good at it, or good in your mind and ready. Would you consider doing like the Molokai Channel crossing of the race on a foil?
Yeah, well, definitely wouldn't rule it out. Yeah. I'd love to do that race on the foil. I'd love to do that channel on a foil.
Yeah.
I think the hardest thing would be giving up paddling to do it on the foil.
Yeah.
I think that would be the challenge. I don't think I could give up paddling that race.
Yep. So sticking with races then, you've had a really great, competitive career, and Where are you competing? You know, we just talked about Molokai, which is the sort of the pinnacle, but you do a lot of like a circuit of races. Are you in the, I think, is it the European Tour for SUP racing? Is that right?
Yeah. So there's a Euro Tour, which is like, I guess, a European professional tour, which links up maybe 8 to 10 races throughout Europe, across their whole summer. So you can go in and race back to back weekends all summer long. But on top of that, I've been racing this year on the Paddle League World Tour, which is this is their first year of like the official Paddle League World Tour.
Wow!
And it's essentially it's been linking together all the big major events around the world for the paddleboard. So races like the Carolina Cup, the Pacific Paddle Games, Molokai, the European Tour, and it's quite a good step forward, I think, for the sport at the moment. Quite a step forward to start to unify all these amazing, exciting races into one tour. So that's what I've been really focused on, chasing that tour and trying to win that title.
Nice. And so how are you doing in the standings right now?
At the moment, I'm actually sitting second. Michael Booth's had a really good start of the season. So this has definitely been like my best performance-wise season on the stand-up, and it's taken a long time, a lot of years to get to this point, and a lot of little steps forward. So it's been exciting. So there's only a couple more. There's only Oregon this weekend, so the Columbia Gorge Paddle Challenge, and then Pacific Paddle Games to finish the year off in Southern California.
Nice. And so today, we're about 2 weeks, give or take, since Molokai and your shoulder. So how are you feeling today with your rotator cuff?
Yeah, it's It's been a tricky 2 weeks. It's definitely not at 100%. Strength wise, it's not anywhere close to 100%. But I've had some really good help, and luckily, like being on the phone to my physio Josh Carter back in Australia, and being able to sort out a few treatment plans, and it's been good. Like first week was pretty bad. I've been able to complete a few good paddle sessions on it. So it's going to be tricky because the paddle gorge is 2 12K races back to back.
Yeah.
On the same day. So it's a lot of paddling in one day. But I think I should be fine for the race.
Good. Good to hear, man. Well, definitely good luck on that. So not just competing, you're also, you help train others. You are part of something called Ocean Performance Center, where you're helping people, you know, get fit and train and all that. So talk about that. You know, where's your interest there? And, you know, what are you doing with that sort of, you know, day to day?
Yeah, the Ocean Performance Center is a gym facility on the Sunshine Coast up in Queensland. Basically, is a Kerry Creatley is the man behind it all. He's an absolute guru when it comes to performance coaching in regards to psychologic and strength and conditioning. And that's it's a facility that's generally it's targeted to athletes, but its primary focus is to target surfers and to try and improve junior surfers right through to the elite level. So yeah. I've been lucky enough. I did a lot of training under Kerry when I was, and at the OPC when I was younger. And I'm actually studying my Bachelor of Sports and Exercise Science at the moment. So that's
nice.
That kind of pathway is the career pathway that I want to take. And I've been very, very lucky that Kerry's helped me out, and I've been able to have some great opportunities to work with some really good, really exceptional surfers out of the Sunshine Coast and out of that center.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. So, you know, and we touched on it, there's this two major pieces to, you know, endurance sports is that physical prep, you know, and then there's that mental prep. And so are you able to, because you've done Molokai, you've done, you know, a lot of different events and just activities where the mental piece is, you know, is such a major hurdle to overcome to keep yourself, you know, positive and energetic. So, with your work with the Ocean Performance Center, do you impart or share some of that knowledge, some of the tactics and or things that you've learned to do with your own mind with some of the athletes who you work with?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of my biggest tools is a lot of the experiences. I've been lucky enough to, not so much the triumphs, but a lot of the challenges I think I've faced and how I've overcome them, I guess, as a young athlete. Like, I'm by no means the guru on psychological performance as an athlete. And I think in my career at this stage, I'm very much learning and very much beginning along that pathway of how I can get the best performance out of myself on a given day. But I think that's the beauty of it, to be able to give knowledge of challenges that I've overcome, and then also learn from a lot of the incredibly talented athletes around me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so cool. Cause that's one thing that, you know, the mental piece you just develop over time and you figure it out for yourself the hard way. Right. But having somebody who's gone through it. And like you said, there's no one guru, but just, you know, I have friends who've done, you know, some incredible endurance things, and just sharing stories of when your mind goes dark in some of these events, when it's so long. And, you know, Molokai is a great example. Sometimes you just really get kind of down on yourself when you're in that spot where you're the treadmill, where you're not moving, and you know, all that. Having some, you know, mentorship in terms of how to overcome that mentally is a real advantage for folks who want to, you know, excel at endurance sports. So then, kind of day to day for you.
Oh, sorry, please. Oh, sorry, no, it was breaking up. Sorry. Go ahead.
Gotcha. So then, day to day, kind of, you know, going forward, you know, we're where's your inspiration come from? I know you grew up with a wonderful family, being the water, love the water in all shapes and forms, but are there folks around you, you know, like that really inspire you to just keep pushing it, pushing, you know, the envelope?
Yeah, definitely. I actually get inspired by a lot of different athletes across a lot of different sports. There's a lot of the endurance, like the Ironman triathlon guys, like the Lionel Sanders, and there's a lot of really, really good Ironman guys. And then you look at the Jamie Mitchells and the Big Wave guys that are really, whatever they do, they push the limit. And I think that's something that inspires me. Whatever guys that just push the limit in their chosen profession and try and push, look outside the boundaries of what's possible.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. And so worldwide, I mean, you must have a really great community traveling all over the world and just meeting folks. I mean, talk about that, sort of that sense of community around you with, you know, the paddling, whether it's racing or just having fun or surfing or any of that. So, you know, how important is that for you? And you know, where does that, you know, how does that factor into just your, you know, maintaining your stoke and energy to do all of this fun stuff?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Hey, like the amount of passion in paddling, like worldwide, is next level. And I think the biggest thing that makes me enjoy my paddling the most is going to places where you wouldn't expect. You wouldn't expect paddlers. You wouldn't expect any sort of stoke to come out of it. And you get surprised. Like there's been places like Denmark, for example, freezing cold in the middle of rivers, there's people paddling everywhere. Like that inspires me. That's really, I think, the sign of how being on the water really is a global thing now. Like guys getting to paddle in Europe in the lakes and through Asia, like guys getting stoked out about paddling and surfing. I think it's amazing how a culture that was so core and so small has expanded like globally.
Yeah. It is cool to see that. And like you said, like the Denmark guys as an example, you know, you don't have to be in tropical blue water with good waves and, you know, warmth to be psyched on being in the ocean, you know, or in the water in general. And so that is one cool thing about paddling, is it's really enabled folks to feel like they're part of the larger sort of ocean and you know, water community. And seeing that happen in a lake in the middle of a country where there's no waves, or, you know, some remote spot, you know, that's cool. And that's one thing that's neat about you. And, you know, just scanning through your Instagram, you know, you're all over the world doing fun things with great people, you know. So how fun. Now, you know, so then what, Lincoln, you're chasing, you're on the tour right now, and it's a big thing. So go forward, you know, a few years, you know, what's kind of next for you, just to continue to just, you know, push your athletic, you know, abilities and level, or what, is there anything else out there? I know you're doing some college now as well. So what's the next sort of five-ish years looking like for you?
Yeah, five-ish years, that's a good question. I think I'd really like to win. There's a couple of races I'd really like to win. I think Molokai to Oahu is definitely a race that I'd like to win. And on top of that, a world paddle title would be the other, paddle league world title would be the other, I guess, the other ultimate goal. And then looking outside that, I think both of those are things I'd like to win once, and then kind of start looking for other challenges, whether it be in the sailing world or on the foiling world, and just trying to expand to see what's possible outside of just the paddling. Yeah. I think that's going to be my next step, is to try and look and maybe incorporate a bit of sailing, a bit of foiling, and just trying to see what else can I do to challenge myself out there.
Yeah. Nice, man. That's what it's about. Just continuing to press it and learn new things and keep challenging. You know, that's like the one, what's been so fun about doing this podcast is that's a common theme for all the folks on the show, you know, and a lot of us, is just continuing to press it, to find new challenges, new experiences and everything. Well, so anyway, I wish you the best of luck on the tour and this coming weekend up at Hood River. you're going to crush it, man. I can feel it.
Thank you. Thanks
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah. And thank you so much for your time and being on today, man. This has been a lot of fun. And, you know, for folks listening, LinkedIndues.com, a great site all about LinkedIn and just a blog. It's just fun to track what you're doing, and you write really well and great pictures. And, it's so much fun to follow you there. And of course, Instagram, a lot of cool shots and everything. So definitely check him out. And then finally, Lincoln, any kind of shouts out or anything you want to say out to anybody, you know, while before we wrap up here?
Yeah, well, thanks a lot, Josh. Thanks. Absolute pleasure to talk to you today and be on the show. It's a really great, I really enjoy all the stuff that's coming out, and it's yeah, it's been a real pleasure.
Cool.
But yeah, thanks to all my sponsors and everybody, like all my family and friends that allow me to do what I do. And yeah, like it's, as you said, like it's definitely an exciting journey that I'm on, and I can't wait to do more.
Good, good, man. Well, we're going to keep tracking you and get you back on here to share some more stories.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right.
Sounds good.
Thanks so much, Lincoln.
All right.
Okay.
See you soon.
Hey there. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast today. We really appreciate all the support. If you like what you heard, please, you know, hype us up on social media. Always appreciate, you know, spreading the word. Give us a nice little rating on the your podcast app, and just keep tuning in. If you're interested in being on the show and sharing some of your life stories, hit me up, josh@thisoceanlife.tv. You can PM me on Facebook or Instagram. Anyway, thanks again for being here, and have a great day.